The circle with which we have been in communication regard that fact as already proved, and devote their messages largely to spiritual teachings and to descriptions of spirit life. In this volume, therefore, instruction concerning future existence is of chief importance. The tests or evidential incidents which we have received have mostly been given as a stimulus to our own faith, and by way of credentials that through them others might believe the more serious communications. A few of these incidents are given in this chapter, trusting that they may serve to inspire belief in the messages that follow. The closing chapter of the book also contains some evidential matter. In 1918, Margaret Cameron's book, The Seven Purposes, was published. Having seen it advertised, I sent for a copy. Of the contents of the book, we knew absolutely nothing, and because of this ignorance, it occurred to us to try and secure some test through its pages. We therefore asked our instructor to give us some word or sentence used in the book. After a little time, this reply came: the name of Napoleon occurs in the book. When the book arrived, I looked eagerly through its 26 tests and evidential matter 27 pages for the wished for proof, but found only a reference to Napoleonic wars. We asked if that was what was meant, but were told, no, Napoleon is mentioned. The next day Sis went through it very carefully, finding at last near its close, the name Napoleon in an inconspicuous sentence of four words. This name, occurring as it does but once in the entire book, seems to us perfect evidence, for it does not seem possible that human telepathy, cosmic consciousness, or other explanation, can account for that one solitary word, among 60 or 70,000 other words, being selected and impressed upon her mind, to be reproduced in writing. Before getting the book, we had been reading others in which the subject of each chapter was indicated in the headlines above the chapter. This had suggested another test from the seven purposes, and we asked if they could give the title of chapter 4. No, was the reply, the chapter has no title. This we also found to be correct. The Society for Psychical Research has insisted that it is the unimportant things or occurrences that are most evidential, important objects or events being more likely to lodge in some human brain, thus bringing telepathy in as a possible explanation. We had one test of this kind, quite inconspicuous in character, but very evidential. Several years before Dee left us, her mother had passed away, and to Dee was left the final disposal of her belongings. Some of these she gave away, keeping many of the smaller things, packing these away in trunks or closets. One evening we asked Dee if she could tell us something we did not know. We had asked this before, but it had always transpired that either Sis or I had some slight knowledge or memory that spoiled the test. As an instance, she wrote once, "I am sure F. R. does not remember the curious little fork which I bought in New Orleans. But I did remember it, and the interesting shop from which it came." But this evening she surprised us by saying, "Mother's hat pin in lower drawer of mahogany bureau." Now it happened that the bureau of solid mahogany which had been in her own room Dee had left in her will to a brother. It had several drawers, and underneath them all, a secret drawer. We believed naturally, that the hat pin, of which we knew nothing, must have been in this drawer and had been overlooked when the bureau was taken away. So we gave up the matter as one incapable of proof. Some months later Sis and I were looking for an old embroidered cape that had belonged to Dee's mother, and we searched through the drawers of a bureau in the room arranged for her mother, but afterward rarely used. The articles had never been looked over or touched since Dee had put them away. In the search we found in the lower drawer underneath many other articles, this hat pin which had belonged to her mother. The bureau, though of mahogany, or at least of mahogany finish, was of much less importance than the first one, and it had not entered our minds to look in it for the hat pin. But the information given, "mother's hat pin in lower drawer of mahogany bureau," was literally correct. Although this may seem a trivial matter, the fact that we had no knowledge of the article, no person on earth even knew of its existence, and that the things had never been examined since they were placed there, these lift the inconsequential occurrence into a test of importance, and point to some supernormal intelligence as the source of the information. When selecting this incident for the book, we asked Dee if she had seen the hat pin in the drawer. She said she had not. She had been searching her memory for tests for us and had finally recalled placing this hatpin in the place mentioned. One evening we were questioning concerning the residence of a person whose address we did not know. We were told, the address is V Street in the town of B. We said that the street was unknown to us. V Street lies between B and C Streets. We were curious enough to motor to this town where we found in a new part recently laid out, that we had never seen, a short street called V, lying for 2 blocks between B and C Streets. For various reasons we did not attempt to ascertain if the person lived on this street. The movement of Sis's arm and hand in writing are to us an evidence of a force quite unknown and quite independent of herself. Her hand rests upon the table with the pencil held loosely between the fingers. After some minutes of waiting, comma immediately at times, comma there are various little twitching movements of the fingers. Then she describes a warmth that creeps up the center of her wrist and arm. Soon afterward her hand is turned quickly back and forth on the table, a dozen times or more, and then moved to the top of the page, and the pencil begins to form the letters. This is Mary's way of announcing herself, the first word usually being her name. When D comes, Sissy's hand is whirled around in circles on the table many times before beginning to write her name. Occasionally when something very emphatic is to be written, or when her own doubt gets in the way, her hand and arm to the elbow are jerked back to the shoulder with such force that frequently she involuntarily exclaims because of the pain. She has tried to reproduce this last motion voluntarily, but has never succeeded in perfectly imitating it. Sometimes when writing, Sis is a little incredulous over the information given and probably resists somewhat the movement of the pencil. Then suddenly her hand will be pressed downward with much force, occasionally breaking the point of the pencil. Mary and Dee seem to have charge of the writing, and usually are the amanuenses for others who are allowed to communicate, but who are not able to write. Occasionally, however, someone from another circle appears who has the ability to control her hand, and comes in some unusual way. She describes as follows the way that one of them came. My hand was resting on the table as usual, when suddenly it was raised with energy, the pencil falling from my fingers. My hand then raced back and forth across the table, the fingers unmistakably imitating piano playing. I was startled and asked, "Who is this?" I picked up the pencil and it wrote, "I will not tell you." Still more startled, I said, "I will not write unless you tell me who you are. I wish you to tell me who I am." "I haven't the slightest idea. I was in S once and saw you at your home." "Well, that does not help me to recognize you. I was stopping at E Hotel." With this there flashed into my brain the memory of a Boston friend who one summer had been at this hotel and who was very fond of piano music. I had often played for him. "S? Are you W?" "Yes, now you have it." Then followed a conversation which identified him quite perfectly. At another time an acquaintance tried for 3 evenings before getting Sis to recognize him. Mary, who was writing, persistently withheld the name, that it might become another proof that Sis's own brain was not dictating the words. Indeed this has been a frequent method of introducing old and half-forgotten acquaintances, Mary believing that these surprises are another evidence of their presence. Last summer, while on a vacation trip, a friend asked Sis if she could possibly get news of a young soldier boy, whose home was in the same town, and who was a comrade friend of her daughter Elsie. He had been killed by a shell shortly after entering the war. She gave his name, W. B., and that was all that Sis knew of him. Always doubtful of her own power, Sis had little faith that the soldier could be found, or, if so, that she could get any satisfactory message, and it was several months before she even made the attempt. Finally one evening she asked if it would be possible, in the multitude of soldiers over there, to find this one. Mary replied, "We are not very good in this line of work, comma detective work of spirit land, you might call it comma, but we are willing to try if you will tell us more about him." Sis gave his name and address, and after a few moments of waiting, there was written, "A young soldier has answered the call and says he is the one. Will you let him tell his own story? I will write for him." He says, "Yes, I was blown out of life there without my knowledge. The last thing I remember was starting on the rush across no man's land, that is all. Then I found myself here, very confused, very doubtful even of my own identity, for thought was not clear at first. The shock to the physical had some influence, I suppose, on the spiritual part of me. But this did not last long, and I began to see other boys coming over, some frightened, some smiling and glad, some with a brave soldier rare still with them. Some of them I knew, and I tried to talk to them, but they were scarcely conscious enough of the change to find words. Then we were beckoned away to some place where we found other soldier boys, who had been here longer, and had found themselves, so to speak. Then we wanted to know how the battles were going, and we were allowed to watch, and sometimes to help the boys, sometimes by sending courage to their soul thoughts, or, when wounded, to send peace thoughts, and glad thoughts even, to those who were coming over. The life here is all so wonderful that I can have no regret. But I wish I could send word to my parents. I want them to know that I live, and live far more perfectly than before. And I am glad to be here, only I do not want them to grieve. Can you tell me how you look? I have been trying to impress my presence upon your mind. I can say, slender of body, straight, and not too tall, with blue eyes, or dark eyes of some kind, hanged if I know their color. But anyway, tell Elsie I am the same boy she used to know, and I want her to think of me with pleasure, believing my life here is larger and better than I could ever have made it there. Goodbye. W.B. That sounded all right, Mary. Do you think he is the right one? Yes, he is a bright boy, and we think he told the exact truth, but we did not know his earth life, and could not prove his identity except through his words. Sis wished he had given more proof that he really was W.B. Almost immediately the pencil wrote, "Try to be passive and take this as he tells it, for he returned as you talked of him." Then evidently to convince her of his identity, he said, "I went to a dance with Elsie not long before I went away. We joked each other about the new dances and she tried to teach me the new steps, and I only stepped on her toes a few times. Perhaps she will remember, I was not in the hometown when I enlisted. I enlisted in another city." After a time Sis sent this account to her friend, and in reply was told that W.B. had enlisted, not in his hometown, but in another, that he returned to his home for a few days before his regiment left, and during that time took Elsie to a dance, and that afterward, dash, when reading this over, months later, Mary said W.B. was the listening, and that he objected to the slang. We were sorry to leave it out, thinking it an added touch. Mary thinks so too, but it might not be understood by dignified readers. He has grown away from such speech and does not wish to be remembered by it. We talked it over and she finally said, "He says, use it if you wish. It might seem more human as you say." I suggested that we use it, and give this record in a footnote. "That is all right, use it if you like in that way, W." When he said goodbye to Elsie's mother, he laughingly told her that he couldn't dance, could only step on Elsie's toes. Three strongly evidential circumstances occur here: that he had not enlisted in his hometown, that he had taken Elsie to a dance, and that the joke about stepping on Elsie's toes was repeated from over there. Another case in which the small things of life prove big in an evidential manner. Mr. Edwin Friend, who lost his life on the ill-fated Lusitania, was at one time, I understand, connected with the American Society for Psychical Research. Mr. J. of this city had been intimately acquainted with Friend, and came one evening to see if we could get any communication from him. Sis took up the pencil, and after a short wait, it wrote, "D is here. What can we do for you?" We explained that Mr. J. would like to talk to his former acquaintance, Edwin Friend. "Wait a little. We are sending a messenger for him." Soon the writing commenced again with, "He is here and is glad to know that his old-time friend is present, and says if he thought J. would respond, he would shake hands with him." Mr. J. said later that to meet him with a joke was quite characteristic. Then Mr. Friend asked if Mr. J. remembered their talks together, and that J. was not as doubtful of a future life as he himself had been. Recalling their former conversations, Mr. J admitted this was true. Mr. Friend continued, "He was something of an investigator, but not along the same lines as myself. This was also true, and entirely unknown to us." Then almost immediately Professor William James took the pencil and wrote these sentences: "Friend is better looking than when on Earth. His teeth are perfect. His eyes do not need glasses." This was a complete puzzle to Sis, as she had never known anything about Friend. But to Mr. J, they suddenly assumed a particularly evidential character. "Mr. Friend," he said, "was a very homely man, and was quite conscious of his appearance. His teeth, it seems, were so prominent as to be disfiguring. And owing to trouble with his eyes, he wore glasses." So that the three sentences in regard to personal appearance took on the importance of tests. Then Mr. J asked if Edwin Friend, as a test, could tell him now what theory it was that he had advanced in a letter to a mutual friend. Mary asked twice to have the question repeated. Then there was a short wait, after which Mary wrote, "Edwin Friend was trying to remember the theory in question. The open truth here, the perfection of knowledge, make us forget sometimes our halting beliefs over there." Finally Mr. Friend wrote, "I was absorbed in the telepathy theory to an extent, and that telepathy plays a great part in communication between the two worlds." This, Mr. J said, was the subject of the letter. He then spoke of having a photograph of Mr. Friend, and the pencil wrote, "Well, he is welcome to it. Tell him he had better hide it under a curtain though." Sis remarked that he had not lost his sense of fun over there. He replied, "We have lots of it, and James and I are constantly joking each other. I get after his pink pajamas, and he calls me a stage beauty." It was some time before Mr. J realized the relevancy of this last. But suddenly he saw in it another test, as Edwin Friend had been very fond of private theatricals, and often took feminine parts in some comedy, thus becoming the stage beauty of the play. The pink pajama incident is familiar to anyone who has read the books by Professor Hislop, the late secretary of the American Society for Psychical Research. At the last minute before the final arrangement of this book, Mary put through another test. It is best given as a copy from our records, as follows: July 15th. Mary has been working for a week on a test that had been arranged in their circle. It began on the 9th. When she said, "Try and be patient with our effort to send you messages. What we wish now is not easy to get across, and so we wish you a patient effort. Will you try now or wait until another time?" "I will try now if you think I am psychic enough. We wish to tell you of a new idea that one of the circle has suggested. It is that you, the circle, wish you to try to." Mary says she will wait. "You do not take my thought tonight. Mary will keep the thought for another time." Then on the 12th, she wrote, "We wish to give you a few words if you can take them. We here are planning some. Will you try to keep passive until I can get through a thought? We wish to try to give you a word or two that may connect in a sentence some other evening as a sort of test." Tests and evidential matter. Try first a word meaning patience. Will the word endurance do? Yes, that will do. Write it down. Endurance. Yes, that will do. Then think of a word meaning the pencil failed to make anything but illegible marks. Are you trying to write the word love? Yes. Love. That is all for this time. Mary says, "Keep those two words separate from other writing and let us add others. Do you wish some other word than love?" "No, that is right. Keep those two words apart. We know that you have no idea of what is coming. Therefore your mind is not doing this." On to other evenings Mary continued these endeavors to get certain words across. There was much difficulty with two of them, so, for the sake of brevity, several pages of the record are omitted, but the method was the same as has been shown. This afternoon Mary asked Sis to write down the words received: endurance, love, electricity, society, thought. Almost before the last letter was written Mary continued rapidly with the following: "Endurance is the thought of many on that plane when they should strive to make love the first in power and achievement, for love is the electric thrill that can mold society into spiritual thought. That is the idea. Now phrase it differently. Tonight the following was written: "We are all here, all the circle, and all are rejoicing that the test went through fairly well. What do you think of it?" Sis said she had not rewritten it yet. The wording can be changed, and the words themselves, if you think of a better synonym. Mary thinks of it more as a test, but the sentiment is what we all believe too. I said I thought it an excellent test, but feared it would be criticized because both words and sentences came through Sis's pencil. Will you be patient even with critics? They are clearing the subject of much that is false. We have one with us who is always a balance to us in this respect, William James, for he insists on the value of tests and of criticism. He thinks this is a good test because you were so doubtful and took the word so slowly. And at the last I wrote the sentence too quickly for your mind to even begin to form a sentence. The words seemed so incongruous, I was wondering how it was possible to include them in a sentence. Yes, I feared your mind might unconsciously suggest a sentence, therefore I wrote hastily what we had decided upon. But we had not put it into the earthly expression, and in the haste the phrasing was rather crude. This style of test was so easy for them to arrange that Mary has given several of them, skeleton sentences, as she calls them, suggesting words through the pencil, that apparently had no possible connection, and then dashing off complete and rational phrases including these words. Two of these are given below. One afternoon Sis took the pencil to ask Mary a question. But Mary had other wishes, it seemed, for she wrote at once, "Mary wishes that you try to give us a time of passivity, that we may try some experiment in." "In thought reading?" "Yes." "Now?" "Yes, now." The word we wish is used to denote a play. Sis offered several words, but Mary said, "No, play is the word we wish. Put it down." Later, Mary used the word drama instead. "Now try a word meaning Sis mentioned some word. Not that, but another meaning the same. Space." "Space will do. Now try a word for the higher." "Not higher, but the same meaning." "Upper." "Yes, upper. The last word must be one meaning action." "Motion?" "Try another of that meaning." "Movement?" "No, but nearly." "Progress?" "Yes." "Now write them together. I have to work through your mind." "Play." "Space." "Upper." "Progress." Then, as before, Mary wrote rapidly, "The drama of life began in space, it moved to upper and higher things, and in all the life of unknown worlds this progress that is the soul of things." Then again, after similar preliminary writing and guessing, the following words were written: "Existence." "Life." "Stillness." "Heavenly." And immediately Mary dashed off the following sentences containing these words: "A heavenly stillness comes to the soul and drives away all jarring strife. This then that existence is reaching its goal, for then it comes near to the heavenly life." Aside from all the actual tests here given, there are incidents in connection with the writing itself that have furnished an accumulation of evidence showing the presence of a reasoning personality, only explainable as a discarnate mind, or rather, many of them. First, is the plainly marked difference in many of the communications, one from another. The messages and remarks from D are often characteristic of her personality, as known so well in life by Sis and myself. Those from Mary frequently show evidences of certain traits that are not manifested by any other communicator. Hale Evans' apparent impatience and his style were entirely distinct from anyone else. While the writings signed W. James may not show any great resemblance to his published books and letters, yet there is a recognizable similarity of construction and continuity of thought common to most of them, though given on different dates. There is no reasonable way of explaining the many different persons who have appeared and communicated, except by admitting that they are what they pretend to be, unless one claims multiple personality of the subconscious mind of the receiver or medium. As this would require the personality to be split tip into more than 100 parts, each apparently quite complete in itself, such an explanation fails to explain much. Then how can the skeptic explain the following incidents and many similar ones? When Mary was telling of the inhabitants of one of the planets, the pencil suddenly stopped. After a short pause, she resumed the writing with this remark: I was asking if I might describe how they walked. Unless it was the subconscious mind of the receiver, or a portion of it, doing the writing, who would it be? Who could it be, except a discarnate spirit? And pray explain why the medium's subconscious mind, if attempting to palm itself off as someone else, should suddenly feel it necessary to ask permission to make some statement. Such an explanation would only complicate the situation. Many times when some certain person is called for, the reply will be, "Wait a little, I will call him," and after a few moments the person called will appear. Several times after such a pause the reply was, "He cannot come just at present," or, "He is far away just now." Dee and Mary are almost invariably present, yet two or three times when Dee was wanted, Mary has replied, "Dee is with her class of children." We were much surprised once to find Dee and Mary both absent, and other members of the circle did the writing. To add to the surprise, an old friend of Sis made himself known after several attempts, a person whom Sis had not even thought of in years. During the writing, Dee and Mary suddenly arrived, saying they had been on a long trip to another planet, and Mary wrote, "Mary is here, and fine things have been going on without me. But I guess I will have to forgive you, for the test was pretty good after all. I was watching the last part of it and think you were rather surprised at the outcome. Can you possibly conjure up any explanation of, or even any reason for, such remarks, except a spiritistic one?" Then, the many personalities that have been introduced, and the manner of their introduction, all have been interesting. Mary and Dee both say this is done principally to furnish evidence in various ways. Some of these persons introduced have been recognized with great difficulty. One never has been able to bring himself to Sis's memory. One of these persons wrote a strong plea for Earth people to study more concerning the future life, and promised to give another message next evening. So, the next evening we were expecting this, and Mary said it would be given. A little hesitancy was shown in beginning the writing, and after a paragraph had come, it was discovered that someone else entirely was writing. Later, Mary explained that this second person had come to them just when they were ready to write, and the first person had given way for the second. Is not the logical and sensible explanation of these surprises that of actual spirit communication? There is plainly evident a strong desire to have as much of the world as possible receive information concerning the future life. In trying to give this, there is found considerable difficulty in getting the medium to write it as wished. Formal messages are tried and abandoned. Many new persons are introduced so that in telling their stories, information can be gotten through. Even this method is not entirely satisfactory, so bits of information are passed out in ordinary conversation. All sorts of schemes are resorted to in attempts to overcome the doubts and caution and other inhibitions of the receiver. The information received, the manner in which it is put through, the evident purpose for which it is sent, the arguments used and the explanations given, all show a reasoning intelligence working logically toward an end or purpose, and this purpose is to call the attention of Earth people to better paths leading to the future life. 4. The awakening. Some of us have watched by the bedside of one whom we loved, in that last mysterious moment when life had separated from the body, leaving it to return to the elements from which it came. And this life? We have questioned, where does it go, and how come this life, soul, spirit, this indestructible, yet invisible something? How does it begin the strange unaccustomed existence, of which we have known so little? These are the questions we have asked again and again, and the replies have given us much to think about. The awakening, we are told, is a gradual coming into consciousness, yet this unconscious condition differs in different people. A case of long suffering, or brain trouble, or extreme ignorance, or even materialism, might result in a long sleep or dream condition. But the unconscious soul is even then beginning its education for the new life, through the suggestions given by watchful guides and teachers. There is a great difference in the length of time of this unconscious period of the discarnate soul. Soldiers killed in battle often become conscious almost immediately. They go out in vigorous health. The life principle has not been disturbed by sickness or age. A very great influence abides in the habit of thought while on earth, whether it is a spiritual conviction or a material belief. Many times the spirit comes over into the dream state with beliefs that have been deeply impressed upon it by mortal conditions.